what I say, that what I'm telling you is we're going to be in a stagflationary environment for a while. Meaning, you know, real returns will be negative, nominal returns will be positive. But defending your wealth against the loss in purchasing power is what you need to be thinking about.
Welcome to Wealthion. I'm Wealthion founder Adam Taggart. Thanks for joining us for part two of our interview with highly respected investor Kyle Bass. If you haven't yet watched part one of this discussion with Kyle, where he details the risks he sees ahead, including a further correction in the markets, a full-blown recession, and the uncomfortably high likelihood of a serious confrontation between the U.S. and China over Taiwan, head over to our channel at youtube.com/Wealthion and watch it there first. It sets the context for the investment themes we discuss in this video. Kyle also shares the assets in his portfolio that he is relying on to successfully protect capital through the rough ride he sees ahead, so be sure to stick around for that. Okay, let's get started watching part two of our interview with Kyle Bass. But let's go right there now, Kyle, into, okay, so the folks that are that watch this channel, follow you, you know, wherever you are in the media, are really just, in most cases, trying to be good stewards of the capital that they have built up so far in their lives. And they'd like to grow it going forward, but more importantly, they don't want to lose it or become collateral damage in a lot of the things that we're talking about here. So as you look out for the next year or two at all these, you know, potential trends that we've been talking about, where do you think the average individual's capital, you know, will be better served? Either it sounds like markets, you prefer the U.S. market more than most others. Are there particular asset classes you like? You know, is cash a pretty good play right now? What would your general advice be?
Yeah, I would say in the near term, you need to have some cash. But cash is not a great long-term asset. I think the U.S. is the place to invest. I think that real assets, hard assets, are probably your best investment, along with multinational corporations that don't do a lot of business with China. But you know, if you're building your wealth and you're kind of taking in everything, if you believe what I say, that what I'm telling you is we're going to be in a stagflationary environment for a while. Meaning, you know, real returns will be negative, nominal returns will be positive. But defending your wealth against the loss in purchasing power is what you need to be thinking about. And I think as we get into the Fed, again, a year or two out, the Fed will be cutting rates. They won't be shrinking the balance sheet anymore. And we will see this gap between the haves and the have-nots continue to widen. So I believe owning productive real estate, I believe in owning, again, multinational corporations. I believe in getting in front of trends that are demographic and business trends in the U.S. If you think about the population migration in the U.S., you have high-cost, high-tax jurisdictions failing at an alarming rate, and people are actually up and moving. So people are moving from the Northeast and the West Coast to places like Florida and Tennessee and Texas, because things are much more affordable and things are much more pro-business. And the environment is a great place to raise families. So that demographic trend has just begun to accelerate. And I think that's a secular trend. So, you know, one thing that I've done, again, not to tout what we're doing here, but I made a pivot in the beginning of 2021 and said, this trend is going to be here for a decade or longer. I think owning rural land within 2-hour radiuses of major metropolitan statistical areas in the states where there's population migration moving at high single digits is a way to stay ahead of that inflation bogeyman. And I think that's where I have my personal wealth focused. And there are a lot of things you can do by owning those lands to enhance your income and your revenue. And so things like that is the way to focus, Adam. It's not just the stock market. I think it's not the stock and bond market. It's not a 60-40 stock bond portfolio. It's staying ahead of the loss in purchasing power by capitalizing on domestic trends is the way to invest for the next decade or so.
All right. Thank you. That is great specificity and exactly the type of thing that the folks watching this channel would love to hear. Real quick, I believe in the past you've talked sort of about a commodity super cycle. You just said you liked hard assets. We talked about how energy is going to have, a lot of upward pressure behind it. So do you think the commodity complex in general is going to perform or maybe outperform relative to most other assets in the next 5 years or so?
I do. Of course, the caveat here is does China have a real recession along with Europe and the US in the near term, which could be pretty commodity negative
Right, because of the drop in demand, right?
for a short period of time. But yes, I believe over the next decade or so, you're going to see a commodity super cycle. I think this is the golden age for family office investing in hydrocarbons. I think that the inputs for the alternative energy marketplace, the silica, the lithium, the everything that you need to extract from the earth to electrify the world's economies with alternative energy, those things aren't even close to being abundant enough to achieve the goals of 2030, 2040, 2050.
Right. And
So
to build them all, you need hydrocarbons to do that.
yeah, the hydrocarbon market for the next decade, I think it is the golden age. So I'll add hydrocarbons to the mix of productive real assets.
Okay. And you said for family offices, but for the average investor, I mean, I'm assuming still buying the producers or the infrastructure companies or whatnot is still a good play here.
Correct. I mean, midstream and upstream companies that are well run is a great place to be. For individual investors, that they will they have outperformed this year, as you know. I don't believe the forward curve, the backwardated forward curve in oil or gas is going to be correct. I think you're going to see supply side problems exacerbate themselves for the next at least the next 7 years.
Okay. Three quick questions, and folks, I'm trying to be really respectful of Kyle's time here, but three quick questions on three hard assets. Gold, when you say protect yourself against, protect purchasing power of your capital, a lot of people's minds immediately go to gold. Gold, at least, is priced in dollars. It hasn't done poorly this year. I mean, it's down a little bit. It's kept its value, I guess. But a lot of people thought, wow, high CPI, this is when gold should be screaming, but it hasn't. What are your thoughts on gold right now?
I think the gold crowd, that marginal gold crowd became the crypto crowd, is what I really think happened. You know, $3 trillion worth of value was created in crypto land. And I think some large portion of that would have been put into the gold and silver markets, and it didn't get there. I'm not that excited about gold. We're not betting against it, and we're not betting on it. I have a couple percent of our family's net worth in gold and silver coins and some other coins because it's fun, it's tangible. I like to talk about it with the kids, but that's not going to move your family's needle or your personal needle, in my opinion.
Okay. Other coins, folks just made me ask, your whole nickel bet, is that you still have your nickels?
So, look. The nickel bet was a way for me to instruct my kids. It literally was a way for me to teach them about central banking. And so, where is there a free call option on copper and nickel in the world? And when rates are at zero, and owning a nickel was a free call option, then we should own a lot of nickels. And so, you know, putting that many nickels in a warehouse and ordering from the Fed was a lot of fun. And I got a lot of crazy feedback. And again, not ever going to move my net worth dial, but it definitely had a permanent and lasting impression on my kids to understand how the printing press works and why there's a free option and how you think about deflation versus inflation. I know a lot of people wrote it up as saying, you know, the guy in Texas has lost his mind. You know, these are teaching moments, and I never bought never bought the nickels or got the nickels because I thought it was really going to, again, be a meaningful net worth indicator or barometer. It was just a teaching moment, and it was very effective. And what's funny, it was also a pretty good market teaching moment, and made people think.
Well, I was going to say it was a teaching moment, I think, for you know, a large number of investors that, you know, you basically sort of shook out of their complacency or ignorance and helped educate them. So anyways, I commend you for it. Last one, just because I see it behind you, a sharp-eyed viewer has seen your whiskey bottles behind you and had at least commented to me on how well sort of rare bottles of whiskey have performed over the past couple of years. Is that a new area of investment for you?
You know, it's a great question. Late in life, I was never a big drinker. In fact, I never drank a drop of alcohol in high school. And I've never smoked a cigarette or done a drug in my life that wasn't prescribed to me by a doctor to this day. But I think, you know, as I got into life and got to be spending time on weekends with friends at the ranch, I started having some whiskey. And, you know, in 2009, Jim Murray, who's kind of writes the whiskey Bible every year in the UK, granted the kind of global primacy position to a Japanese whiskey, to the Yamazaki sherry cask. And I happened to be in London in 2009, and I called my assistant and I said, get me one of these. I've never tried it. And we couldn't find one. It had all disappeared from the market because, as you know, 20 years before that, the Japanese never anticipated the world catching on to loving Japanese whiskey. And right. So that became somewhat of a fun side project for me. The bottles that are behind me will never be drunk. They're just pieces of art. Many of them are 50 and 60 years old. And I ended up buying a couple of collections from Japanese collectors that were basically like estate selling them, i.e. they were close to passing away and they wanted to sell whole collections. So what you see behind me, I collect first edition books from both economic history and world history. And then I collect Japanese whiskey. And so a little bit of my collection happens to reside behind me. And, you know, if things get too bad, I can turn around and just start drinking at some point.
There you go. That is just fascinating. Well, thanks. All right. Look, I'm going to get to my very last question, which is basically where can folks go to learn more about you and your work? But before I get there, this is not giving you a chance to do it justice, but you just mentioned Japanese whiskey. You have taken a very large public position on the Japanese economy, the famous bug in search of the windshield comment. I'll have to save this for the next time we have you on, Kyle, but just, you know, in a minute or less, what's your general current outlook on Japan right now?
Yeah, Japan's is in a really precarious position, right? They want to maintain price stability in their currency, and they want to maintain yield curve control, i.e. they've said they'll buy any and all bonds from 0 to 10 years, and they've let the 30 years technically flap in the wind. So whenever they buy a bond, that puts more yen in the system, and those yen decide whether Japanese rates or US rates or European rates are better, and the yen leaves the system. So you've seen the yen, move up, you know, close to 150. I think it's around 135 now. I have, from what I remember, maybe 139, somewhere in there. And Japan's just in a really, really bad scenario where they either have to keep their rates anchored or they have to let their currency go. And what they've decided to do is let their currency go and verbally engage from the prime minister's perspective and from the BOJ's perspective in trying to maintain some sense of stability in the currency. But unfortunately, the Japanese population will end up losing their purchasing power in a major way through yen depreciation. And that's how it's going to affect the aging population of Japan. So you definitely don't want to be long yen dollar right now.
Okay. All right. So many more questions on that, but like I said, we'll have to save them for next time. Well, you've given us just an awful lot to think about, and you've given us an awful lot of your time. Thank you so much, Kyle. For folks that have really enjoyed getting to know you and your positions better through this interview, who'd like to, you know, follow you and your work, is there a place they can go?
Sure. Our new private equity firm, where we're focused on defending our own net worth and friends' net worths and families' net worths from inflation, is called Conservation Equity Management. And if you go to that website, you can get a hold of Steele, who works with me, and happy to entertain questions about what we're doing.
Thanks. And Steele was very helpful in setting up this interview. All right. Well, look, this has just been an absolute pleasure, Kyle. Look forward to having you back on the program if you're willing to come back on at some time, but this has just been wonderful.
Sure. Thank you, Adam. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, now is the time when the program where we bring in the lead partners from New Harbor Financial, one of the endorsed financial firms by Wealthion. I'm joined this week by senior partner Mike Preston. John Lodra, his colleague, has the week off. Mike, great to see you. Look, just an absolute ton of things to react to in that wonderful interview we just did here with Kyle. What caught your attention the most?
Well, I really enjoyed that talk, and Kyle is certainly a legend. So it's really an honor to be on the same program as Kyle Bass. So thank you for that, Adam. And there's just so much in there. And I'll just hit a couple of the highlights and then we'll see where we go with the conversation. Kyle says he's pretty certain that we're in a recession here in the United States. We agree. It's actually worse in Europe. That makes sense. Furthermore, says that China's credit impulse is not responding to their attempt to lower rates and create economic growth. And talks a lot about our Fed for the first time hiking rates into a recession, actually tightening into a recession. They have to. They're really, really kind of boxed in, and they have to do it. And you know, he says furthermore that he thinks is maybe 1 year maximum before Fed starts to pivot and cut rates. He's probably right. And the market's probably going to be lower when that happens. I don't think the Federal Reserve can cut rates with, you know, the stock market up at 4,200, which is where it's close to right now, which is still just 13% off the all-time high on the S&P, a little bit more than that on the NASDAQ, about 23%. But the market is down, we have to remember, off of just a really egregious parabolic blow-off top that sat at the most overvalued level in U.S. history by many metrics and still sits at about, the whole market sits at about three times sales, price to sales at about three times, which is a ridiculous overvalued level. And sales are not so easily manipulated as earnings are. He talks a bit about housing. We agree that housing is overvalued. We'll likely see a pullback. Kyle says maybe 10 or 12%. I wouldn't be surprised to see it a little bit more, maybe 20% or more. If you really think about it, the blow off top in housing in 2021 was about plus 20% across the board. Those types of late stage blow off moves have a tendency of being given back very quickly. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a 20% pullback, which of course is actually a loss relative to the baseline price, because 20% of a bigger number is more than the initial move. And you know, he talks a bit about China and the geopolitical risks that are going on, which completely makes sense to me. China may very well make a move in Taiwan in the next year or two. If they do, that'll be a big deal. It'll be a really big deal. China's on the SWIFT system. U.S. carries a large stick in terms of being able to withdraw that SWIFT system with China. China probably would look at that as an act of war. There's so many much going on in this interview. I can't pretend to be an expert in all of it. I don't think that we here at New Harbor are economists. I think we're tacticians. We know how to manage money. We know how to apply money management to an individual's life. We know how to understand that. I don't know exactly what's going to happen if China makes a move on Taiwan and then the SWIFT system is withdrawn, but I can only imagine that it's simply going to be a potential catalyst, a spark that can ignite a very, very unstable situation across the board of hyper overvaluation and constant central bank intervention. So I'll take a pause there. There's so much to talk about, including some of the assets that Kyle likes, a lot of which have overlap with us, but I'll pause there.
All right. Well, to your point there about hypervaluations and you know, decade plus of central bank intervention, you know, Kyle just put a ton of massive risk factors on the map here, right? Saying that, look, we're if we're not already in it, we're entering recession, it's going to get pretty bad. I think the term he actually used was it's going to be so painful, the data is going to be mind-boggling how painful it's going to be, and that's what's going to force the Fed back to pivoting, which is why he thinks the Fed will be cutting within a year. Obviously, he talked about war with China over Taiwan, which, you know, dear God, let's all hope that doesn't happen. But if it does, we've just seen, you know, the global chessboard and the global economy and the global markets, you know, suffering pretty serious shockwaves following Russia's incursion into Crimea. And in terms of sort of the US's own interests, I think the Taiwan issue is probably multiples higher than that, given the critical nature of the semiconductor industry and the close ties between the US and Taiwan and whatnot, as well as how many businesses are intertwined, US businesses are intertwined with China. So if you know, all those relationships got upended because two superpowers go to war over Taiwan, I mean, it's Katie bar the door in terms of, you know, what the implications of that could be. He talked about the prolonged energy issues that we're going to be dealing with for years and years to come, because of chronic underinvestment, you know, way for years preceding where we are today. But of course, sort of the new world where, you know, Russia is being boycotted by a lot of the West, and that's disrupted a lot of flows, most notably in Europe. And basically just saying, look, it's going to be hard for the Fed to tame inflation over the coming years because the energy component is going to be so stubbornly resistant to coming down, because there are going to be these different price shortages going on because of supply issues or price upwards pressures because of supply shortages. So that's just a few of the massive risks that he mentioned, right? So, you know, when asked, so where are you putting your money? You know, his first answer was, I really like cash right now. It's for the short term, it's a really good place to be. So I really took from Kyle, this is the time for defense. You know, he said he expects market prices to go lower from here. So echoing a lot of our recent guest experts, he expects the bear market to come back, which would mean this rally that we've seen over the past, you know, month and a half would be a true bear market rally that kind of, you know, makes people complacent again, gets money in off the sidelines, and then the bear comes back just to maul everybody who thought they were in the clear. So I know this echoes what you and John and your staff there at New Harbor have been saying, which is, hey, we think this is a time for defense. We think it's much more better right now to prioritize protecting the capital you have than reaching for yield because of the risks that are in the market. And I'm pretty sure you guys weren't putting a war between the US and China in the next year plus, you know, into that mix already. So anyways, let me hand it back to you. But Kyle did dial through a couple of other assets. You know, big fan of hard assets, which I believe you guys are. Says it's the golden age for investors to invest in hydrocarbons right now. Really likes the US market in general, but again, not looking to deploy a lot of capital there until the Fed is back to cutting rates, at least, you know, a year or so from now. He also said he likes multinationals that don't deal with China. So I'll give the football back to you here, Mike, but I'm guessing you're going to echo the, yes, we think tonight is the time for defense, but if I'm wrong, let me know.
There's a lot of overlap there with what Kyle said and what we believe in. Yes, we're big believers in cash. I feel like we've been saying it for longer than I'd like to admit. It's true. We have been in a permanent...
Sorry to interrupt, but it's been one of the best performing assets this year.
It's true. It's true. But in cash now, for the first time in a long time, the first time in years, you can actually get 2.5% to 3% on cash. The one-year treasury bond, basically 3%. The two-year treasury bond, maybe 3.2%. It's a real competitor to the S&P 500, the dividend yield of the S&P 500. You know, it's actually quite shocking to me that the S&P is only down 12 or 13% from the most extreme bubble high ever, when all of a sudden there's actually an alternative to that, and that's called cash. And I know a lot of people are concerned about the headline inflation number, which just printed 9%. Really don't think inflation's going to stay there. It's going to stay persistent. Kyle,
sorry to interrupt it, but it did come down. It did come down from 9.1% to 8.5%. So we're in the mid eights. So we're lower, but I mean, that's still a ridiculously hot print.
It's still high, 8.5, 9. They're kind of the same thing. I don't think they're going to stay there. it probably will come down. A lot of your guests on this program over recent weeks have echoed that same sentiment, thinking that maybe we'll see something like 5%, 4%, maybe 4 to 5% will be the trend in the next couple of years. That's still pretty high, and it's still a concern, I know, for holding cash long term. But I do believe that the option value of holding cash here for the next several months, 6 months, 12 months, even 18 months is very much worth the risk of even a slight negative real rate, because of the fact you can get 3% to park cash. And it's the only way that you're going to be able to buy things at a lower price, whether that's real estate, productive assets, or stock market assets. Look, this is just a game about keeping asset prices higher. So far, the Fed and other central banks are winning. And sometimes it feels like they're always going to win. But history says they're not going to.
Hey, and Mike, if I can just interject for 1 second, because you're echoing exactly what Kyle said as he dialed through all of what he's invested in. He said, really, the key thing right now is he sees a stagflationary road ahead. And he said, your goal as an investor is just to invest in things that defend against the loss of the purchasing power of your capital. Don't try to reach for massive gains right now. Just try to keep what you got in terms of purchasing power. So yeah. Very, very consistent with what you said. And I just want to put in a quick plug for the folks that didn't see the video that I put out a couple of weeks ago on I-bonds. And I'll put a link to the I-bond up here. You're limited in how much money that you can put into an I-bond every year. So it's not a magic solution for everybody. But when you talk about return on cash, you're getting a 1 year return on cash right now of 9.6%. That's pretty amazing. I mean, I agree with you that the 2.5 to 3% is way better than what cash has been yielding in past years. But man, to be able to get over 9% right now in an instrument that you can sell out of in 1 year with guaranteed safety, not bad. And even if we come down to the sort of 5% range, you know, you were saying, Mike, still getting 5% per year in a cash equivalent, not too shabby.
It's not. And frankly, we tell our clients too, yeah, it's a great idea. Buy $10,000 worth of I bonds for each person per year and make it a long-term savings plan. At least you're guaranteed to always have a real return on that. There's other liquidity issues. They're not easy to sell, particularly within the first 5 years. There's a small penalty, but honestly, I think it's a good idea. And we agree. And we tell our clients to do that too, particularly when we're asked about it. So again, we like cash for its option value, hard assets like gold and silver. Kyle talks some about that. We probably recommend a slightly higher allocation than he talked about. But we do believe that there's a place for everyone to have maybe 5 or 10% of investable assets in gold and silver, preferably in bullion form. The other things that we are doing in our portfolio besides a high cash buffer is still gold mining stocks. Precious metal miners, fantastic values here. They have been beaten down recently, so it's been a little bit painful. We've been able to hedge away a good portion of that downside, but not all of it, with the options that we use, the short calls and the long put options. And remember that a hedge is meant to defray or minimize downside risk, not eliminate it. But we're staying in that position, and hopefully the ride's a little bit more comfortable with some of the hedges that we've had there.
Right. Sorry to interrupt, but just letting folks know, I just recorded an interview yesterday with Brian London, who publishes the Gold Newsletter, which tracks precious metals mining stocks. So that video will be coming out probably early to mid next week. And one of the key insights there from Brian is that, yes, the precious metals have definitely been in the slump as of late, the precious metals mining companies. But when and certainly Kyle thinks so, the Fed pivots later this year, some point early next year, he thinks that's going to be the next really big catalyst to send them off to the races. And so advises this is a good accumulation period for people that don't have the exposure they want to that space. So just wanted to add that validation to the point you just made.
It's a great time to buy the miners. Gold is sitting here basically falling asleep at 1800, but the bullish triangle that we've talked about so many times has really not been invalidated yet. It projects when we do get a breakout to the upside to about 2500 in gold. If and when that happens, you should see GDX, the popular ETF that's trading right around 26 right now. That should trade 55 plus if that happens. And that's a double from here. nothing in investing is a guarantee, but it's just a great value here. And so we want to continue to hold that core position. Also, long-term bonds, even though they've been disappointing lately, we think that they're oversold and yields will probably come back down over the next few months. So we still like an intermediate trade in long-term bonds. And emerging markets, we've long held a position in emerging markets, which we do have hedged with a short market position. So it's basically a paired trade, but we like emerging markets because of the low valuations. Our emerging markets position does have some China exposure. I know that Kyle may disagree with that, but I will say that that position is hedged against overall market risk. And other than that, we continue to hold high cash concentration, or should say cash equivalents, over 50% presently, Adam. It's been a little frustrating because the market looked like it was going to break wide open and finally have that elevator drop down a couple months ago. We bounced right from 36.50 or so. The charts still look like this is the end of a bear market rally and that the next elevator drop will go down to around 3,200 in our view, which will give us some opportunity to add sectors and broad market exposure. Last thing I'd say is that a lot of people we're talking to here are feeling like this is a return to normal. Back up to, we've retraced a little over 50% of the entire drop from the top. The rise has felt pretty relentless over the last 6 weeks. And some people are getting FOMO again, fear of missing out. They're saying, oh, geez, you know, this market is just bulletproof. It's never going to go down. And I think there's going to be one more melt up and everyone wants to stay in for that. Maybe there will be one more melt up, but I honestly don't think there's any way really to play that with any certainty. And particularly if you don't have a plan about what to do if you're wrong and we just break wide open from here, I wouldn't even bother playing it. Just hold your dry powder. Wait for your chance. I think the first elevator drop brings us down to the 3,200 range or so. And frankly, I don't even think that would be the end of the bear market. I think that would be a bigger bounce point.
Okay. Well, you guys and a number of the other longer term, financial money managers that I've had on this program recently, one that comes to mind is Ted Oakley. From Oxbow Advisors, who has some years on us and has seen a number of bull and bear markets. These sort of white hairs in the industry say, look, if this is indeed a bear market, we'll know when it's getting ready to turn because nobody will want to touch a stock again, right? People, they're in the morale around stocks, their confidence in stocks will just be shattered. And of course, we're just nowhere near that yet, Mike, because of all the speculation that we still see going on in the market right now. You just mentioned the term FOMO, but we've seen over the past week, we've seen some really egregious examples of investors still just piling in for those, shoot the moon gains. And last week, the poster child for this was Bed Bath & Beyond. Right, which is sort of a small middling, or retailer that's, not doing super well. And then all of a sudden its stock went from something like, I think over a several week period, it went from something like $4 or $5 up to almost 30. And it was in this crazy gamma squeeze. And a big part of it was because the CEO of AMC, which is another, no, sorry, the CEO of GameStop, which is another big, famous meme stock. It was really the first big meme stock that got to the Wall Street Bets crowd involved. He made a big investment in the company, and all of a sudden, the Wall Street Bets crowd, the apes, said, "Okay, well, that's our boy. We're going to ride this thing and do the same thing with Bed Bath & Beyond that we did with GameStop." And lo and behold, we saw history repeat. That price just went bananas. But then within a matter of days, the GameStop CEO said, "Oh, by the way, guys, I'm out of this thing." And the price cratered. I think it's back below $10 now or somewhere around there. And so you had, this massive rug pull where all these retail speculators got absolutely destroyed just in the span of a couple of days. Right. So I think before we turned on the recorder here, you said that AMC, another meme stock, is getting beat up again today too, but we're still seeing a willingness to rush in and speculate. I think mm-hmm. some of these rug pull moments, this destruction that we're currently seeing you tell me, but to me, that looks a little bit like a late stage sign in this rally that says, okay, the speculation while it's starting is not sustaining. And that's, you know, kind of like when you throw a ball up in the air, you know, you get to a point where the ball just kind of hovers there for a little bit, can't get any higher, and then it starts coming down. I wonder if we're approaching a time in the market like this around this latest rally.
All the signs are there, Adam, and they've been there a long time. I mean, if this is starting to feel like an illusion somewhat, that's because it kind of is. There's not a lot of fundamentals driving this market. There's a lot of forces that are somewhat of an illusion that are creating this feeling, this wealth effect feeling, which is the whole objective of central banks, to create a psychological feeling. There's not a lot of connection to reality. A lot of what we think is wealthier will be vaporized by the time this is done. There's a lot of hot air here. It's not normal for a stock to go from 5 to 30 and then back to 9 in a couple days. And it wasn't just Bed Bath & Beyond. Take a look at all of the meme stocks together. They all move the same. AMC went up and has now created like from 25 to 7, it looks like. And GameStop, same thing. And, you know, this market is probably the biggest bubble of our lifetime. It's probably the biggest one we'll see. And 2021 was just a huge example of just how big a bubble can get, a blow off in everything. And here we are 9 months later, still trying to top. And it's just a slow, painful, lumbering process. But yes, I think that it won't die easy, and it's not dying easy, and the timing is impossible. But the fact that it's drawn out over so long, over so many different assets, and just has a million lives, I think speaks to the size of this thing. It's the biggest of our lives. And I think another of your guests, I think it was Jim Rogers that said, you know, we're probably going into the biggest bubble of my life. He said, I totally agree. Biggest bubble of our lifetime.
He said biggest bear market, but yes, as the bubble burst going into
the biggest bear market of his life. Yeah.
And he's been
Jim's around a long time.
80s, so
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And another guy, David Hunter, you know, has said, hey, this is a, you know, I think the way he measures it, it's like a 40-year, you know, secular bull market. And he says, you don't have a massive run like that end overnight, right? It takes a while. There are going to be, you know, some retests and, you know, times before it fully, you know, starts getting downward velocity, you know, a couple of stick saves and things like that. So who knows, we may be in that phase right now. To your point that you just made there about, you know, sort of trying to keep the wealth effect going and trying to keep, you know, everybody believing in the market. What's interesting to me is, so we have Jackson Hole tomorrow, right, which is where, you know, Jerome Powell from the Fed is there, and they're meeting with, you know, some of the biggest minds, you know, in the world around money. And there's going to be obviously some proclamations coming out of there. There always are. But it's been really interesting to me over the past, you know, month plus, where the Fed is talking, or, well, probably even longer than that, the Fed is talking a very hawkish game and saying, look, you know, we're laser focused on getting inflation under control. It's still way too high. And we're going to be doing a ton of rate hikes. They published the rate hikes they were going to do. They've now said, okay, we're not going to telegraph specifically going forward, which the market interpreted as a dovish development. But the Fed is just going to say, look, we're going to be data dependent. As long as the data forces us to be hawkish, we're going to be hawkish. And the market is kind of saying, I don't really believe you. You guys have pivoted early in the past. And if you look at the Fed, you know, dot plot projections for where they think interest rates are going to be versus what the market's pricing in, the market is a lot more dovish than the Fed is speaking right now. And what's interesting to me, Mike, is obviously one of those two is going to be wrong. In the past, it's usually been the Fed. I got to say, the Fed usually doesn't have a great track record of being right. But as I've talked about a lot in this program recently, with inflation as high as it is, 8.5%, unemployment as low as it is, and the market's kind of in rally mode, at least here in the short term, you know, nothing is breaking. The Fed has a lot of air cover to continue pursuing its inflation mandate. And it's already said, look, if we get to trade off inflation or jobs, we're going to sacrifice jobs to bring inflation down. So I see a lot of potential for the Fed to continue hiking here for as long as it can. And of course, there's a whole debate of, it'll hike until it breaks something. And then people, you know, a lot of people say, well, given how weak the economy is, it might break something next week, right? And so they're projecting a nearer term breakage. But provided something doesn't break immediately, I mean, I think we could see a fair amount more rate hikes from here, which at some point, if that's true, the market is going to have to reprice. It's going to say, you know what, we were wrong. We thought the Fed was going to pivot a lot sooner. It's not pivoting now. Because of those higher interest rates, we're going to have to start bringing prices down. And that really could be kind of a trapdoor moment in the markets, I think, potentially. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, why wouldn't they keep raising rates? I mean, these are very smart people. I mean, they understand how, I've got to believe that they understand how overvalued and how fragile markets are. And the only real lever they have is to cut rates in ease. And so since they're getting away with it so far, why wouldn't they continue? And the stock market obviously is something that a lot of people look at, but it's really something that benefits the very wealthy more than the average person. So there's some extent, I think, that with the Fed would allow for at least what would be perceived as a short-term drop in the stock market for the greater good and the ability to react more later. You know, and Kyle mentioned that the Fed is actually withdrawing liquidity to the tune of $60 to $95 billion a month at the same time that they're raising rates. That's pretty rare. And he talked about a time before. I can't remember exactly when it was he mentioned, but the market actually didn't drop until both things were happening, until the tightening happened and the rates were increasing. So you kind of got a double whammy going right now, which is going to be a big headwind for the market. And yeah, they will probably stop what they're doing when they have to, but it's going to be almost certainly a lot lower than this kind of cookie cutter standard 20% retraction that we've seen in this bear market so far. This should not be a run-of-the-mill recession, should not be a run-of-the-mill bear market, particularly from what we've seen, just the extremes of it so far. So we think a lot more is likely to come.
All right. Look, I got a fair amount more notes here. One of them being the loan forgiveness announcement that just came out last night from the Biden administration. I'm going to have to earmark that for next time we have a little bit more time. But I do want to give you the last word here, Mike, before I wrap things up. You mentioned that, you know, you've had a number of calls from prospects and clients recently where you're sort of detecting a little bit of FOMO, which seems, again, like a pretty big reversal from a couple months back when you were getting people that were really, you know, worried about where markets were headed because it was all about where's the bottom, right? What particular advice would you offer to the viewers right now, given kind of the pulse you have on the average investor's mindset right now, given all the calls you have every week?
Yeah, FOMO is definitely back. People kind of think that this market is bulletproof, that there's likely one more leg higher. And to be honest, I can't guarantee that there's not. I can't guarantee that David Hunter is not right. He may very well be right. He talks about 6,000 on the S&P. My point is that even if that happens, it's going to be very difficult to navigate that and get out before what is almost certainly going to be the ultimate collapse. And if we were to crack and break down right from here, I've just seen it. I've been in this business since the 90s. Psychologically, people will just freeze. I'm literally having conversations with people right now that say, if I just get back right back to where we're at least within a couple percent of the high, then that's where I'm going to pull the trigger. Mm-hmm. But we're very close to the all-time high, you know? And then if it doesn't happen, then this level that we're at now becomes the new level that they want to get back to, and then so on and so forth, all the way down. So my best advice would be to do something. Just do something. Do it right now. If you're in an 80-20 or a 60-40 portfolio, just sell something. I mean, if I was in a 60-40 portfolio, if I was talking to somebody that was 60% stocks, I'd tell them to sell down to 50 right now, and then 40, and then 30. You know, get down to 30% or less. It's going to give you a lot more flexibility. And furthermore, if we drop tomorrow and you sell 10% today, it's going to be a lot easier to take additional action and you're not going to be so frozen. Just believe that it can be proven that the expected returns of a 60-40 portfolio or an 80-20 portfolio are likely to be negative for many years to come, potentially even 10 years from now.
I think John Hussman's charts are still predicting that, right?
They are. And what that means is that you'd be lucky to have the same money 10 years from now that you have today. And you might lose half of it along the way. Why go through that?
Right. Long term, the market will same money in a nominal sense too, right? It's not factoring inflation in yet.
That's right. So particularly when cash, I'll say it again, when cash is earning 3%, close to 3%, you know, it's, again, it's surprising to me that the S&P hasn't cracked more, because there's real alternatives now for dry powder. So do something, sell down a little bit. Think about having a gold and silver portfolio of 5 to 10% of your investable assets if you don't already have that. But by and large, reduce your equity exposure, get ready for better bargains down the road. And yes, it feels like I've been saying that forever, but I believe that's the situation. That's what the math says.
Yeah. And you guys are still, I know that the mining stocks have been in a slump, pulling things down a little bit, but for this year, you've been largely flat in your performance. Maybe you're down a couple points at this point in time, but
Between 1% and maybe 2%, let's call it 2% at the moment. Yes.
Okay. And so that's compared to what you said, what, down 12, 13% for the S&P and 20 something for the NASDAQ?
Yeah, 22 for the NASDAQ, 13 for the S&P year to date.
Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to underscore that while your approach sounds maybe defensive and conservative to a lot of folks right now, it's been the winning approach this year versus the general markets.
We're not happy being down at all, but it is the case right now, particularly with the weakness in mining shares. These small negative fluctuations can be made up very quickly, nearly immediately if you get a bounce in miners, for instance. But our real story is to be able to layer in more on further drops in the market. So yeah, it's somewhat frustrating to us that the market bounces so vertically and so rapidly over and over again. Because one of these times it won't. And that's what we would call the perfect storm. It'll only ratchet lower. And of course, in our opinion, suck everybody in what would be kind of like the perfect trap. That's what we're guarded against. That's what we have a plan for. We've got hedges. We've got options that we can use to layer into the market systematically.
All right, great. Well, look, we're going to have to leave it there, Mike. So folks, a couple quick resources here for you. One, obviously, we're huge fans of telling folks that given how uncertain, treacherous, turbulent these markets are, and certainly if you listen to Kyle, he ratchets that uncertainty up to the nth degree. I highly recommend that you create a investing plan, but recommend that you do that with the benefit and expertise of a professional financial advisor that understands all these macro risks that Kyle and I talked about. And I'll tell you, there really aren't that many out there. So if you want to talk to one of those guys, we can connect you to have a free consultation with them. There's no expectation to work with them. It doesn't cost you anything. You might even be able to talk to Mike and the folks at his team there at New Harbor if you want to. If you want to figure out how to schedule one of those free consultations with one of our endorsed advisors, just stick around at the end of the video here. We tell you how to do that. A reminder that we are continuing the new practice of giving you a free summary of my key takeaways from important videos that we do on this channel. So I've just written up my notes to the Kyle interview. And if you want to get those so that you didn't have to take, you know, super detailed notes yourself, just go to wealthion.com/Adam's notes and you can read them there for free. And now, folks, an important reminder, whether you've heard that we have the upcoming Wealthion Fall Conference next month or not, now you know. The early bird price discount of about 30% off expires in just a week. So I just want to flag that for folks. If you've been thinking about registering, but you haven't yet, go to wealthion.com/conference right after this video ends and go register now. For those that haven't already heard the background, you can get all the details at that URL. But very quickly, we have an unbelievable lineup of some of the best minds on what's happening in the economy and in the financial markets. Just to dial through a few, we have Lacey Hunt, former Federal Reserve senior economist, now runs the incredibly successful bond fund Hoisington Management. Lacey will be there talking about Fed policy. We'll have Lynn Alden talking about the market outlook. We'll have Matt Taibbi, prize-winning journalist, talking about capture of Wall Street and the media, and how he's seeing a lot of the same abuses that he saw leading up to the 2008 crash. We'll have Grant Williams and Stephanie Pomboy debating which style of inflation, deflation, disinflation, stagflation is going to be dominant from here. We'll have Alf Pecatiello talking about the bond market. We'll have Brent Johnson talking about the dollar and foreign exchange. He obviously is the developer of the dollar milkshake theory. We'll have Doomberg talking about the energy markets and what's going to happen with the global energy crisis. We'll have Nick Jurley there talking about the housing market. We're going to have a number of other experts as well in precious metals, the mining stocks. We'll have our endorsed financial advisors there like Mike to answer any questions you have during the day. There's going to be a lot of interactive Q&A with the experts this year. So it's going to be a really phenomenal time. But to participate in it, you got to register. And if you're going to register, do it soon so you capture that 30% discount. All right, folks, that's it. Mike, thanks so much for joining me for another week. Whatever happens from here in the markets, our guarantee to folks is that we'll be tracking it together and trying to make sense of it for them here on this program next week. Everybody else, if you've enjoyed this interview with Kyle, would like to see him back on again, would like to see other interviews with great minds like his, do me a favor and just support this channel by hitting the like button and then clicking the red subscribe button below, as well as that little bell icon right next to it if you haven't done so already. Thanks so much again, Mike. Everybody else, thanks so much for watching.
A great talk. I really enjoyed it. See you next week, Adam.
If you'd like to schedule a consultation with one of the financial advisors at New Harbor Financial, simply go to wealthion.com. These consultations are completely free and there are no strings attached. The good folks at New Harbor will simply answer any questions you have about your investment goals or your portfolio and give you their best advice given their latest market outlook. They're willing to do this because they care about protecting people's wealth and because Wealthion has connected them with so many thoughtful investors just like you over the past decade. We started doing this because so many people have approached us in frustration, looking for a solution because they're feeling out of alignment or downright ridiculed by the standard financial advisors who have been managing their money. You know the type. The kind that just pushes all of your money into the market, scoffs at the idea of owning gold, and when you bring up concerns about the market's sky-high valuations, they say, "Don't worry, the market will always take care of you." For many of the reasons discussed in today's video, we think this is one of the most challenging and treacherous times in history for investing. We strongly believe that today's investors are best served working in partnership with a conscientious professional financial advisor who understands the risks in play. Now, we're agnostic which professional advisor you work with, as long as they're good. If you're already working with one, that's fantastic. Stick with them. But if you don't, or are having trouble finding one you respect or trust, then consider talking to John and Mike and the team at New Harbor. Now, for those about to ask, yes, there's a business relationship between Wealthion and New Harbor, which we've put in place to make sure everything is handled according to SEC regulations. All the details on this are clearly provided on the Wealthion.com website. Also, it's important to note that New Harbor is able to work with U.S. citizens, green card holders, and those with existing assets in the USA. But for regulatory reasons, they aren't able to take on non-U.S. clients. All right, with all that said, if you'd like some insight and guidance on how to protect your wealth during this unprecedented time in the markets, go to wealthion.com to schedule your free consultation with the good folks at New Harbor. Thanks for watching.